Let the band play.
Baby, lately I've been going crazy. I've been going crazy lately. I've been going crazy, crazy. Yeah, I've been going crazy, crazy. Yeah, yeah. I've been getting paper, paper. Made a hole in without a motherfucking major label. Yeah, they like clock, you major. I just set a new set of holes on a new Mercedes.
Alrighty. Welcome back to the Future of NFT Podcast, the most efficient and realest podcast in the NFT world. I'm your host, Jared. Today, we're going to be talking about cars and design with Iman Magsudi. Before we get into this episode, I have a special announcement. I'm officially the host of the Exio Report podcast. I am super excited to join the Exio brand alongside Iman and his entire team. Super just futuristic, forward thinkers, just wonderful people. So I'm super excited about that. So the Exio Report is going to be more sophisticated design, luxury, metaverse concepts. We're going to have guests on that are experts in their field. Come on, shoot the shit with us. And I'm the host over there. Shit will not be boring. That's all I'm going to guarantee you right now. So look out for that. I'll have all the links in the show notes below, so you can go ahead and check it out. Exio.report. That is the actual URL. Insane website, up-to-date news. So go ahead and check that out. So Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Prada, right? These are some of the brands that are just cute to me right now, right? These are cute brands, right? I'm calling it right now. Exio will be at the forefront of sophisticated luxury designs, and this will be digitally and physically. So there's going to be more info to come on future episodes. Can't give away too much sauce, right? So stay tuned. But the future of NFT schedule will remain the same. You will get an episode every single Monday. No ifs, ands, or buts. And of course, I'm going to drop in the Inside Jared's Head, keep the personal development going. Again, that's one of my favorite topics. Something I always think about and I always want to put out to the world. So Inside Jared's Head will continue. And along with the just culturally relevant tech trends, aka what the fuck is Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk up to, or what's going on? What is Amazon doing? Like who's getting into NFTs? Like, who's talking shit about NFTs? So just basically all the shit that we always talk about. So nothing is happening with the future of NFT podcast. We will continue strong. And what are we talking about? We just fucking got started. We just got started with the shit. Even if it's episode 110 or whatever, 111, doesn't matter. We're just heating up. We're barely getting started. So stay tuned for that. On a side note, I just got to say thank you. Just thank you for every single listen, just for everything, reaching out, just you take the time. Again, there's a bunch of different podcasts out there. There's a bunch of different NFT podcasts. We know they're fucking garbage. We know why you're here. All right, let's be real. I'm just kidding. I hope when I say shit like that, you know, I'm just kidding. Like, I'm not a fucking asshole like that. Well, sometimes if I have to be. But anyway, so just thank you. That's all I have to say. It's just thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Again, I truly appreciate all the support, all the love. Like, none of this shit would be happening. We wouldn't be doing nothing if it wasn't for you. If the listener is not here, then I'm nothing, right? So that's it. That's all I got to say. Again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I hope one day I get to look you straight in your eyeballs, put my hand out, and give you a very firm handshake. Truly, I mean it. So if you're in Austin, hit me up, and we can go do some shit. We can go link at some place over here and talk about NFTs, talk about metaverse, talk about what you got going on, whatever. I really want to be in the flesh with the people I fuck with, and that's it forever and always. Like, again, you support me, I support you. Like, you fuck with me, I fuck with you. Like, that's just how it goes. It has to be like that. So the episode you're about to listen to is from the Exio Report. Please enjoy.
Okay, let's do it.
Today we have Mr. Iman Magsudi. Iman, welcome to the Exio Report.
Hey, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So, Iman, today the topic is about cars. You're a car lover. I'm a car lover. We could talk all day. So again, old cars, new cars, expensive cars, like all cars need love. So, and each car gives you a different experience, which I know you'd agree with. So I'm just curious for you, Iman, like, what was your first car? Like, how was that entire experience? Like, just again, did you give it a name? Like, when did you start driving? Like, how was this experience for you?
Okay, it could be like a weird answer because my first experience with cars was not that pleasant because, like, at that time I didn't have the driving license and the car was like a shitty car. So it was like the equivalent of Chevy Spark, like a small four door, like tiny little micro car, like a smart four door, that kind of car in that class. I mean, it was like a manual transmission, three cylinder, 900cc, you know, that kind of a car. So you couldn't expect much, but it would just take you from point A to point B. And yeah. I was stressed because at that time I didn't have the driving license and I was driving the car. So, yeah, but it kind of, for me, like as a car lover, I didn't really at that time cared about like the driving experience because I was like into designing cars and styling. So I was like pretty much into the looks of the cars. So basically when I was like walking in the street, I was just looking at cars, you know, so I was enjoying what was happening around me, you know, looking at cool cars and stuff, not focusing on the driving experience. Then later on, then I experienced like different cars and I just noticed that, oh, okay. So each car has its own character. So they're totally different in terms of experience. And then I was like, okay, now I know what I'm missing. Then I was like, okay, let's get a better car. Even in the economy class, you could like have cars that would give you like a great experience. For example, let's say like cool, like Japanese cars, for example, right? Reliable, affordable, you know, everything you want in a daily driver, right? Yep. But even in that class, we have cars that suck and we have cars that excel, right? For example, in the economy class, whatever you buy from Mazda is like ultimate driving experience in the economy class, right? It's very sporty, very well-tuned chassis platform. Yep. Styling is nice. It's like a European car built by like a Japanese car maker on a budget. So yep. It feels like that. And then if you like, let's say in the same class, you compare Mazda to let's say Honda, Nissan or Toyota, you get totally different experiences. It seems like some Toyotas are built for grandmas. Yep. So it's like that.
That makes sense. So Basically what you're saying is on your first car, you didn't throw an exhaust. You didn't put some racing stripes on it.
No. Yeah, no, I didn't. Although at age 17, I was dreaming of building my first car and I wanted to be like a mid-engine car. So I looked around and found a Lancia Monte Carlo. That was like an 80s mid-engine Lancia car, four-cylinder turbo designed by Pininfarina. So I got that one, tore that apart and made like a scale model of how I want the design to look like and found a guy that could build the body panels out of sheet metal. And he started working on it, and then like we were modifying the car. So that was my dream car. So I didn't care about the car I'm driving, right? So because my mid-engine beast was in the works, you know. So the car was being built at a like a body shop basically, and the guy was an old guy, and he just had a stroke and stopped coming to work, you know. So the project was trashed, and so basically I trashed one of the rarest mid-engine Lancias ever. On a project that never ended. So that was one of my big, like, regrets that how that happened. I mean, come on, that was like a good car. I mean, I could have like not touched the car and had the mid-engine launcher, right? So that was that. And then, so after that failed attempt, I went on and got a, like a few years later, let's say 5-6 years later, I got this mid-engine Porsche because I was into mid-engine, like the tiny one. I forgot what's the name of that car. So it was like another four-cylinder mid-engine tiny Porsche. It's like the grandfather of Cayman and Boxster. So I got that one, and that one I built like the car on that. So that was my first basically experience of, you know, building cars and, you know, driving cars and stuff like that.
Interesting. Yeah. So I'm excited to get into like the design aspect, but I just got to touch here. What if Iman had three cars? Mm-hmm. In your lifetime, three cars that are just like a must-have to experience. What are these three cars?
It's a really mean question to ask from a car designer because you have obviously like dozens of cars that you are in love with. I personally, I mean, my take would be I would pick cars based on their design rather than performance, because if you want to like have performance, obviously you have like totally different options. Yep. And so for me, it's like if I want to go like chic under the radar and at the same time like exotic, I would pick Aston Martin 177. There's just 77 of them in the world. It's a very rare car. And to me, it's like beautiful, timeless. So it's going to be like looking great 10 years from now, 20 years from now. It's still going to be exotic. And it's not going to be like looking like, I don't know, you know, tacky. So that's one. And then the other one is like, I have basically have four cars that I love. So two of them are from the Ital Design, the studio that was basically this guy, the greatest car designer of all time called Giorgetto Giugiaro. He was running that studio. And during the 90s, they basically made some of the most iconic concept cars. And out of those, two of those cars are my favorites, the Ital Design Nasca and the Ital Design Alfa Romeo Shigera. So basically, Nasca was a project that they did with BMW. So it has like BMW looks, but it's like super futuristic and clean. The other one is like they did a collaboration with Alfa Romeo. It's called Shigera. Those cars are like iconic. I would love to have them, or at least like a copy of them. And then the other one is the Bertone Stratus Zero. That's like the, I think that's the most insane car ever designed, ever built, like ever. And nothing like that is going to be built like again. I've seen that car in person in Peterson Museum in Los Angeles. And in person, it's even more sick, more crazy than the pictures. So yeah, that's like the sickest car I've ever seen. I would love to have one.
That's interesting. Yeah, and that Peterson Museum in Los Angeles is insane.
Yeah.
So now I'm just kind of more focused on like brands, right? Car brands over the years, right? So car brands, if they don't have, I guess, like a good look, right? Over, it takes kind of, I guess, maybe like a 5, 10, 15 year window for cars to kind of like revamp their brand and get back going and for like the public to view them differently, basically. Has there been any like car brands that you've seen like make like a 180, or any car brands that you've seen that weren't, I guess, maybe as cool or as, I guess the public didn't really like them that much. And now it's like, oh, people will consider this car brand more.
Oh yeah. I think that the king of this situation is Kia. So they used to build like crappy cars. And I mean, everything about the brand, the car sucked, right? But then they hired this genius guy from Audi, head designer of Audi. The guy was in charge of designing some of the most iconic cars in Audi. They hired a guy, Peter Schreyer. And then this guy basically turned Kia upside down, and he created like cool stuff, and the management gave him like freedom to do whatever he wants. And that's what designers do if they want to do, you know, crazy shit. They just do crazy shit, and that's what he did. So he turned the brand upside down. Right now, from design standpoint, if you like park a Kia, like a modern Kia, let's say whatever EV6, and yep, then a Mercedes EQE or EQS, EQS sucks. Mercedes-Benz sucks. I mean, Kia is like superior in terms of design, being authentic, and being like, they just stand out, you know, and that's a rare thing that happens for an economy car, you know. And then the sister company, Hyundai, they couldn't do the same thing, you know, although they're owned by the same like holding group. But this one was like absolutely amazing. And that led him, Peter Schreyer, to be the only guy that is the CEO of the company and the head of design at the same time. That never, like, that have never happened. You know, you'd never put like an artist guy to run a car company, you know, but that's like how successful he was.
Wow. That's super interesting. I know that. That's crazy. And it's crazy that you mentioned Kia, because that is, for me at least, that's one of those brands that I saw on the street, like I'd say within the last like year, And one of those cars that, you know, a Kia when you see a Kia, because it is literally, I guess the old branding was spelled out KIA, and now it's just like clean. Like you can't even tell it's a Kia, right?
Yeah.
Like it just looks so clean. So 100%, I think you're right on point with that one. So now I just want to talk about, we got to talk about the Tesla Cybertruck, right? Like we're talking about design. This is not a car that looks normal at all. Like nothing about the Cybertruck looks normal.
Again, right.
Straight edge, like what do you think? Do you think more car companies are going to follow this trend, or how do you see that playing out?
It's pretty hard to say if other car companies are going to follow the trend or not, because basically they had to reinvent a new production basically method to make it. And it's not easy to basically, if you're GM, right, you already have like a production line set up. It takes like billions to set it up, right? And then if you want to just scrap everything and then start from scratch to build something like that, like Cybertruck, it's highly unlikely because, I mean, it doesn't work. And it's like pretty risky. You don't know if it's going to flop or if it's going to succeed. What would be the market reaction, let's say, 5 years from now? Right now it's hip, cool, nice, futuristic. But maybe 5 years from now, after the users are driving and using the car, they might have different opinions. So I think it's going to be pretty risky. I don't see other brands following that trend. And I think Tesla did like a huge bold move in the wrong direction. So let's put it this way. Tesla design is crappy, right? Huh. So when they came up with Model S back then, it was like a pure gold. It was like beautiful. Nice proportions, it would stand out, nothing on the road would look like that. And the guy who was hired to design the first Model S, Henrik Fisker, he did a very bad job. So Elon fired the guy. The guy came out and started Fisker brand, and which flopped a few times. And then now they have the Fisker Ocean in the market. And then hired head of design for Mazda, because Mazda always does great cars, right? So he hired France, and he designed like a cool car that basically looks like a Mazda. If you look at it, like from, as we go back in time, look at Mazda cars, let's say Mazda 6 of that era, it has some design cues of Model S, and that's pretty interesting. So basically, he designed a very cool car back then, but the rest of the lineup following that design trend is super boring. Model 3, Model Y, they all suck. They look like a fish, and not a like a good looking fish. It's like an ugly fish. So pretty ugly cars. They will not stand out. And in that regard, Tesla needed to do something, but they did it in a class of cars that have the most conservative clients, like trucks, right? So it's kind of interesting. I think if they will buy it because it's really cool, I'm not sure if it's the best design out there. I haven't seen the car in person yet. I wish I had the experience of driving the car or whatever. I did not. So as a designer, I love the fact that it's a futuristic design on the road. I love it. But I would love to see some of that futuristic approach in the more mainstream cars that Tesla have in the production line right now, you know? So it's like having like a car that from design standpoint, you would give them like rating D, and then you would have like a super futuristic car that is looks like a concept car, and you would give them like A+, you know? So if I was Tesla, I would make this like a little bit more cohesive. So I would make all the lineup to look like at least B+, you know? So that's what I think about like Tesla design in general. Like their interior obviously is one of the worst interiors in the industry. No, it is. I mean, it's like, it's one of from build quality, very poor materials, poor build quality interior wise, because that's one of the major areas that the car companies can cut costs. That's what GM was doing for like pretty much 70s, 80s and 90s. Cutting costs in interior, and that's exactly what Tesla is doing under this wrap of being minimalism and cool and futuristic, right? They're just getting rid of all the parts that make a car usable and nice in the name of minimalism, but that's basically cost cutting. So yeah, their interior is one of the worst interiors ever in any car. And then the design is like one of the most conservative designs I've ever seen in any car brand. I can compare them to Volkswagen, basically, that they basically their designs is mostly evolution, not a revolution. So yeah, I think that's my take on Tesla design in general. But Cybertruck, of course, in the entire lineup, that's my favorite. If I would have like a Tesla, which I won't, it would be Cybertruck.
That's awesome. Even I love that. I just love your perspective. You're just like, the interior shit. Like, that's what it is. And it is.
I mean, there's no way around it. It's a shitty interior. Just compare, let's say, Model Y, right? Yep. Interior to Cadillac Lyric. Same price range, same specs, same size, same everything. When you like step into the Cadillac, it feels like a Cadillac. But once you step into the Model Y, it feels like Corolla. You know, the giant screen. No, it does. I mean, just a giant screen. And I'm sorry, and a giant iPad does not make up for the leather or like nice switches and good trim and, you know, cool shit. You know, it just doesn't. For me, it doesn't. So you cannot replace luxury with a bunch of buttons or apps in the screen.
Yep. That's interesting. I love that, Eman. So now just one more fun question for you. We see concept cars. I see them on Instagram. I see them on Twitter. Just crazy concept cars.
Mm-hmm.
Design a fantasy car, right? What is like one feature or gadget that you would have that is just insane, out of the world?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I like the shape-shifting cars. There are some concepts that the car actually shifts. You know, we've seen one from Audi lately. I think it's a Stratosphere something. It's like a convertible. So the car basically stretches. So when you're like in the relaxed autonomous mode, the car stretches a little bit. The steering wheel just retracts, and then you can just lay back and enjoy like an open top, like chauffeured experience, right? And then on the other side, when you like want to be like sporty, like you want to be like sitting a little bit like straight, so the car shrinks a little bit, the steering wheel comes back, and then you're in charge, so you can have a more engaged driving experience. So shape shifting is something that basically in the real world you cannot do. There's like tons of limitations, like production, safety, homologation, this and that. But in the concept world, you could do that. And basically, the Italian designer Shigeru that I mentioned had a very basic feature, like shape-shifting feature, like the body panels were flush, and then when you wanted more air to come in, there were like louvers that would like open up. So that was one of the first attempts to do that back in 1997. So I think that was one of the pioneers in that era. So yeah, I think shape-shifting is what I want to see more. So basically, if you want to be like sporty, so you look like sporty, it's not just a spoiler that comes up, the car shifts into that, so you know that this guy is like serious, get out of the way, so he can just, you know, go. And then you will, I mean, that's the thing. Let's say you're on a highway, especially let's say in Germany in an autobahn, like you won't know, because there's like no speed limits there, right? So you won't know if this Golf behind you, the VW Golf behind you, it's gonna pass you, like zip past you like 190 kilometers per hour, or the guy is just cruising at 60 kilometers per hour. You wouldn't know. You know, there's no way to know. But if the car shifts into super sport mode, then you know that, okay, this guy is no kidding. Let's get out of this way, you know. So I would love to see that, you know. Otherwise, it's just like a setting in your screen, and it's just you knowing what you're doing, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And so that's crazy about the Autobahn, too. Is like, I know if you're in that left lane, like people just over there on the Autobahn, they just know if someone's coming hauling ass behind you, just get over. So I wish that was something we had over here where people just...
Oh, yeah. I would love to have that. I mean, I'm not sure if I would, like, stay alive for that long, but yeah. That cool. Would be fun.
Awesome. So now, just from scratch, right, when approaching, like, I guess, like, just a new car design project, what are just some, like, the key factors, like I guess... some items that are just top of mind, right? Like that influence your initial design concept for the car.
Okay. So there are a couple of ways that you can make like a design stand out, and I always look at them. First of all is like proportion, like things should feel and look Right. And like there's a German word for that. They call it Gestalt. So it's the first impression you get just by looking at the silhouette of the object. So if the Gestalt is right, then everything's right. Then second thing is like proportions regarding like the position of wheels. If you have like a super sport looking cool car, but the wheels are not the right size, or like they're basically more inward in the body panel, not flush with the body panel, stuff would look off and you don't know what's the problem, you know? So that's one of the other things that like wheel position is very important. Other than that, I would seriously look into basically finding a new form language. You know, design is like a language. It's like you have like different dialects, different accents. You know, let's say a French guy talking English, they have their own way of pronouncing stuff, so they have their own flavor. Design is like that. You can have like a let's say family car. You can design a family car, but the language could be like French, you know. The language could be German, the language could be futuristic, the language could be like whatever, you know, safe, you know, like Volvo, you know. So I would define the language first that I want to design this car. So if it's going to be like, how is that going to feel? That will translate into 3D form afterwards. And that's what we designers do. Like we transform feelings into 3D geometry. And that's what I would do. So first of all, it starts with words, not lines, you know, just figure out what I want the car to be described as, you know, and based on that, I would just, you know, back engineer the rest of the process.
That makes sense. I like that. So when we're talking about seeing right, like the aesthetics of the car and just like practicality, right? Like what is something that you think about there?
Well, okay. I don't think too much of practicality, to be honest, because I'm a designer and just care about more aesthetics than practicality. But you cannot just, you know, neglect it. You can't just, you know, not think about it. So from practicality standpoint, I would say I would care least about storage.
Gotcha.
I mean, I don't think that's a defining factor because like, you can always find clever ways to put more storage here and there. So driving position, first of all, seat height, correlation between like the driver position, the steering wheel, the instrument panel. That's, I guess, the best approach to come up with the practicality. Then the egress, entrance and you know, exit from the car. Those are the stuff that I would put into the practicality standpoint. And of course, the clearance, overhangs and the clearance of the front and rear bumpers, like you don't want to scratch the car. Those are the practical things that I would look into if I'm designing like a sports car. Of course, for a family saloon or for like a SUV, things would be 100% different. So it depends on which class of car you're designing, and that would define what practicality items are more like in priority, right? So to me, it's like space is the first thing. Of course, it has to be like moving on the road. So clearances are like is a must. It's not even something that you are like have to basically it's not like something, a feature that you would skip. That's it's a given, right? But space engineering, like allocating space for different like functionalities of the car, that's we call them packaging. That would be the first thing that I would focus on.
Interesting. So now, Iman, as the car industry moves more and more electric, right? We know it's, I don't know, I think is it 2024 in California? Okay. So we know that this is going to be where it's headed. Like it's going to be electric, right? What do you think? Does this have any effects on like the way car designers are going to like approach new designs? Like are, you know, like does this mean anything at all?
Well, yeah, basically, when this entire trend started, there was a little bit of confusion because what we know as car design has been affected by some other metrics before. For example, you have like a combustion engine, you need like air to go in, you know. So basically, that affected the car design. So cars just had to have like a grill, you know. So the cars have grills from 1905, right? So basically, if you wanted to be like distinguished on the road, you would design your own grill, right? So right now, I mean, cars, they don't need the grill anymore. So you're losing identity, right? Yep. And then some cars are trying to, even Tesla, like Model S had like a black plastic where the grill would be if it was a combustion car. And then they ditched it, right? Because it was stupid. Like, why would you have that? But some cars still have it. I think the cars that have like strong brand identities, they stick with the brand identity, which is having some sort of a grill. They represent that grill with black plastic where the grill used to be. And then they come up with smart like functionalities to replace the grill in terms of like letting air in. So for example, Mercedes-Benz has a black thing going on in the front, and they have all the radars and sensors behind that black plastic, you know. So same thing goes with Cadillac and like Audi, BMW even. They just have like some polycarbonate like plastic that has some gadgets behind it, right? But some car brands that are born electric, a lot of Chinese brands and a lot of like new brands, let's say Polestar, they just ditched that altogether. So they had to come up with other clever ways to distinguish their designs on the road. So they came up with cool. The next easy thing to do is lighting. So the light bar trend popped up, right? So that's why you're seeing a lot of light bars going on, even in the electric Ford F-150, right? Because, I mean, the grill itself is just like black piece of plastic. Then that's how you can tell like an electric car nowadays, which is kind of tacky. Yeah. But that's one of the things. And then the other thing is they thought that because of the range anxiety, they want to pretty much come up with like any solution to give the car 2 miles, 5 miles, 10 miles more range. So they thought we need to make them as aerodynamic as possible. And that meant that they designed the cars in a way that there's not much going on. It's just like a blob. And that's like no character at all. And then there's like more blobs on the road right now with zero character from cars that are born electric. Only the legacy car brands have managed to keep that. I mean, Mercedes is an exception because they basically screwed up. Other brands like Audi, Porsche, BMW, and Polestar, they managed to keep their core brand identity while going electric. I think they did a better job. But that's like subjective. Some guys might be, including myself, say BMW is not nice looking, but at least it has character. Mercedes basically has no character, their electric lineup, which is EQ. Yep. So I would say the challenges for designers is mostly like surrounding how can you create the same distinctive design and not look stupid because A, there's no engine there. The A post is moved forward. There's more room. So the greenhouse, the car cabin is larger. That makes the car to look fat. And then you have battery pack underneath, which like adds more height to the car, which again makes the car look more fat. Yep. So there's like a lot of fat to deal with in terms of mass of the car that you need to reduce with clever visual tricks. For example, some car brands, they basically have this, you know, black stretch of plastic going in the bottom of the car. So it's basically your eye don't detect that black thing. So you see the colored portion. So you don't think the car is too fat. So it's like slick and nice and whatever. Although it's not. If you measure the proportion, it looks like more like an SUV than like a sedan. It's pretty much the case with Model 3. Yeah. So yeah, so that's the challenge that car designers have to overcome to make their designs more distinctive. And you know, I think in 5-10 years, you don't need to emphasize on being electric anymore, you know? So there's no trends to follow, light bar trend, you know? It's just like you have the freedom to go back to your roots and look into the basically heritage of your brand, if you have any, and bring them back to life.
Interesting. I love that. So now, Iman, look at what is something that's just exciting, like, or like an innovative trend like specifically in automotive design, like over the next few years that you're looking forward to, or something you see on the rise that you're really liking, or just what's your take there?
Okay. The most interesting thing for me to follow is how are we going to manage autonomous driving and how is that going to affect the car interior? Because, I mean, I like driving. You know, I drive a Porsche. I drive like cars that have engagement, right? So I don't care about speed that much. I care about engagement and fun, you know? So that's one of the factors that I want to see. What would happen to the enthusiast cars, you know, if they want to go down the autonomous road? What's going to happen? Like, if you don't have a steering wheel, how's that going to feel? I mean, it feels like a bus, you know? So to me, it's like, okay, I really want to see what's going to happen if there's no steering wheel, no pedals. Cars will feel like robo-taxis, right? So it's not going to be a car anymore. And it's like, the entire car driving experience becomes like a hobby, like guys that basically ride horses right now. Yep. I mean, you don't need horses to move around, but you do it for the sake of fun. And there's a bunch of sports around it. Yep. So I think the car driving experience from an enthusiast standpoint, yep, would be the modern version of like riding a horse. Like, you want to be engaged, you want all that trouble, yep, and being slow, but it's more fun. So, yeah, to me, that's the most interesting thing to follow about autonomous driving and, like, lack of steering wheel and, like, sitting on a couch and being driven from point A to point B,
yep,
which is, like, boring if you're not watching Netflix.
Yep. No, 100%, I think you're exactly right there. For me, it's, like, cool, right? Like, if you've never experienced autonomous driving, I guess from just like an average user perspective, it seems like, oh, it's cool, right? You just kind of chill and it takes you wherever. But again, someone that likes to be behind the steering wheel, someone that wants to actually be on the track with the Porsche in the corners, that is, it's obviously not the same at all. Like, you want to be engaged, like you want to be able to feel the turns and everything. So I agree with you 100%. So now, Eman, last question, actually, what do you think that there's going to be any car manufacturers that get the exhaust note right? From the electric side.
Okay. So hit me on the right spot. So, yeah, there have been some attempts, basically. I think it started, believe it or not, with BMW and i8. They started this trend, and which wasn't that successful. I think among all these brands, there are two companies that are more likely to get it right. And it's going to be either Porsche or Aston Martin, because they're the most famous brands being recognized by their exhaust notes, even more than Ferrari and Lamborghini. So, and these guys, like Porsche has already some electric cars in the lineup, and I think the next generation 911 could be electric, or at least some sort of a hybrid. So they need to get it right. Otherwise, the entire character of Porsche is going to be it's going to be destroyed. So that's, I think they are most likely, and they have really good sound engineers in the company. And an Aston Martin, traditionally, they have had like the best exhaust notes like ever in the industry. So they have to, I mean, for them it's like existential. Like, either you get it right or you're not Aston Martin anymore. So yep. I think these two car brands should be getting it right. But I wouldn't be surprised if like a random Chinese brand get it right, you know, because it's like, you know, brave new world. Who knows? You know,
yep.
But some brands, I'm sure that they're not going to do it right. And that's going to be Rolls Royce. That's going to be Mercedes-Benz and Tesla. They're going to fuck it up. But the other brands have more chance of succeeding.
Awesome. Well, Eman, it's always a pleasure talking to you. This was a great episode. So again, thank you for joining us at the Exit Report. Look forward to more chats. I know, again, me and you can talk forever. If I don't stop this podcast, we'll be going forever.
Right. Thank you so much, Jared. It's always fun talking about cars with you.
Awesome. All right, Eman. We'll see you.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Baby, lately I've been going crazy lately. I've been going crazy. Yeah, I've been going crazy. Yeah, yeah. I've been.
getting paper, paper. Made a whole end without a motherfucking major label. Yeah, they like clock, you major. I just set a new set of poles.